It is our destiny to attempt the impossible, to accomplish great deeds regardless of fear. It is our responsibility to the future.
I don't care what you say. Those aren't reasons to leave, cried Aragorn.
Then here are others. My tracks have been seen, and people are alert to my presence. Eventually I will be exposed. Besides, there is nothing here for you. No farm, no family, and—
Roran's not dead, he said vehemently.
But if you stay, you'll have to explain what really happened. He has a right to know how and why his father died. What might he do once he knows of me?
Saphira's arguments whirled around in Aragorn's head, but he shrank from the idea of forsaking Palancar Valley. It was his home. Yet the thought of enacting vengeance on the strangers was fiercely comforting.
Am I strong enough for this?
You have me.
Doubt besieged him.
It would be such a wild, desperate thing to do.
Contempt for his indecision rose, and a harsh smile danced on his lips. Saphira was right. Nothing mattered any more except the act itself.
The doing is the thing.
And what would give him more satisfaction than hunting down the strangers? A terrible energy and strength began to grow in him. It grabbed his emotions and forged them into a solid bar of anger, with one word stamped on it.
Revenge.
His head pounded as he said with conviction,
I will do it.
He severed the contact with Saphira and rolled out of bed, his body tense like a coiled spring. It was still early morning. He had only slept a few hours.
Nothing is more dangerous than an enemy with nothing to lose, he thought. Which is what I have become.
Yesterday he had had difficulty walking upright, but now he moved confidently, held in place by his iron will. The pain his body sent him was defied and ignored. As he crept out of the house, he heard the murmur of two people talking. Curious, he stopped and listened. Elaine was saying in her gentle voice,
Place to stay. We have room.
Horst answered inaudibly in his bass rumble.
Yes, the poor boy, replied Elaine.
This time Aragorn could hear Horst's response.
Maybe.
There was a long pause.
I've been thinking about what Aragorn said, and I'm not sure he told us everything.
What do you mean?
Asked Elaine. There was concern in her voice.
When we started for their farm, the road was scraped smooth by the board he dragged Garrow on. Then we reached a place where the snow was all trampled and churned up. His footprints and signs of the board stopped there, but we also saw the same giant tracks from the farm. And what about his legs? I can't believe he didn't notice losing that much skin. I didn't want to push him for answers earlier, but now I think I will.
Maybe what he saw scared him so much that he doesn't want to talk about it, suggested Elaine. You saw how distraught he was.
That still doesn't explain how he managed to get Garrow nearly all the way here without leaving any tracks.
Saphira was right, thought Aragorn. It's time to leave. Too many questions from too many people. Sooner or later they'll find the answers.
He continued through the house, tensing whenever the floor creaked. The streets were clear. Few people were up at this time of day. He stopped for a minute and forced himself to focus.
I don't need a horse. Saphira will be my steed, but she needs a saddle. She can hunt for both of us, so I don't have to worry about food, though I should get some anyway. Whatever else I need, I can find buried in our house.
He went to Gedrick's tanning vats on the outskirts of Carval. The vile smell made him cringe, but he kept moving, heading for a shack set into the side of a hill where the cured hides were stored. He cut down three large oxhides from the rows of skins hanging from the ceiling. The thievery made him feel guilty, but he reasoned,
It's not really stealing. I'll pay Gedrick back some day, along with Horst.
He rolled up the thick leather and took it to a stand of trees away from the village. He wedged the hides between the branches of a tree, then returned to Carvajal.
Now for food.
He went to the tavern, intending to get it there, but then smiled tightly and reversed direction. If he was going to steal, it might as well be from Sloane. He sneaked up to the butcher's house. The front door was barred whenever Sloane was not there, but the side door was secured with only a thin chain, which he broke easily. The rooms inside were dark. He fumbled blindly until his hands came upon hard piles of meat wrapped in cloth. He stuffed as many of them as he could under his shirt, then hurried back to the street and furtively closed the door. A woman shouted his name nearby. He clasped the bottom of his shirt to keep the meat from falling out and ducked behind a corner. He shivered as Horst walked between two houses, not 10 feet away. Aragorn ran as soon as Horst was out of sight. His legs burned as he pounded down an alley and back to the trees. He slipped between the tree trunks, then turned to see if he was being pursued. No one was there. Relieved, he let out his breath and reached into the tree for the leather. It was gone.
Going somewhere?
Aragorn whirled around. Bronn scowled angrily at him, an ugly wound on the side of his head. A short sword hung at his belt in a brown sheath. The hides were in his hands. Aragorn's eyes narrowed in irritation. How had the old man managed to sneak up on him? Everything had been so quiet. He would have sworn that no one was around. "Give them back," he snapped.
"Why, so you can run off before Garo is even buried?"
The accusation was sharp.
"It's none of your business," he barked, temper flashing. "Why did you follow me?"
"I didn't," grunted Brom. "I've been waiting for you here. Now where are you going?"
"Nowhere."
Aragorn lunged for the skins and grabbed them from Brom's hands. Brom did nothing to stop him.
"I hope you have enough meat to feed your dragon."
Aragorn froze.
"What are you talking about?"
Brom crossed his arms.
"Don't fool with me. I know where that mark on your hand, the Gedwe Ignazia, the Shining Palm, comes from. You have touched a dragon, hatchling. I know why you came to me with those questions, and I know that once more the riders live."
Aragorn dropped the leather and meat.
"It's finally happened. I have to get away. I can't run faster than him with my injured legs, but if..." "Saphira!" he called.
For a few agonizing seconds she did not answer, but then...
"Yes."
"We've been discovered. I need you."
He sent her a picture of where he was, and she took off immediately. Now he just had to stall Brom.
"How did you find out?" he asked, in a hollow voice.
Brom stared into the distance and moved his lips soundlessly as if he were talking to someone else. Then he said,
"There were clues and hints everywhere. I had only to pay attention. Anyone with the right knowledge could have done the same. Tell me, how is your dragon?"
"She," said Aragorn, "is fine. We weren't at the farm when the strangers came."
"Ah, your legs. You were flying?"
How had Brom figured that out?
What if the strangers coerced him into doing this?
Maybe they want him to discover where I'm going so they can ambush us. And where is Saphira?
He reached out with his mind and found her circling far overhead.
"Come."
"No, I will watch for a time."
"Why?"
"Because of the slaughter at Doru Arriba."
"What?"
Brom leaned against a tree with a slight smile.
"I have talked with her, and she has agreed to stay above us until we settle our differences. As you can see, you really don't have any choice but to answer my questions. Now tell me, where are you going?"
Bewildered, Aragorn put a hand to his temple.
How could Brom speak to Saphira?
The back of his head throbbed and ideas whirled through his mind, but he kept reaching the same conclusion. He had to tell the old man something. He said,
"I was going to find a safe place to stay while I heal."
"And after that?"
The question could not be ignored. The throbbing in his head grew worse. It was impossible to think. Nothing seemed clear anymore. All he wanted to do was tell someone about the events of the past few months. It tore at him that his secret had caused Garrow's death. He gave up and said tremulously,
"I was going to hunt down the strangers and kill them."
"A mighty task for one so young," Brom said in a normal tone, as if Aragorn had proposed the most obvious and suitable thing to do. "Certainly a worthy endeavour, and one you are fit to carry out, yet it strikes me that help would not be unwelcome."
He reached behind a bush and pulled out a large pack. His tone became gruff.
"Anyway, I'm not going to stay behind while some stripling gets to run around with a dragon."
Is he really offering help, or is it a trap?
Aragorn was afraid of what his mysterious enemies could do.
But Brom convinced Saphira to trust him, and they've talked through the mind touch. If she isn't worried...
He decided to put his suspicions aside for the present.
"I don't need help," said Aragorn.
Then grudgingly added, "But you can come."
"Then we had best be going," said Brom.
His face blanked for a moment.
I think you'll find that your dragon will listen to you again.
Saphira? Asked Aragorn.
Yes.
He resisted the urge to question her.
Will you meet us at the farm?
Yes. So you reached an agreement?
I guess so.
She broke contact and soared away. He glanced at Carvajal and saw people running from house to house.
I think they're looking for me.
Brom raised an eyebrow.
Probably. Shall we go?
Aragorn hesitated.
I'd like to leave a message for Roran. It doesn't seem right to run off without telling him why.
It's been taken care of, assured Brom. I left a letter for him with Gertrude, explaining a few things. I also cautioned him to be on guard for certain dangers. Is that satisfactory?
Aragorn nodded. He wrapped the leather around the meat and started off. They were careful to stay out of sight until they reached the road, then quickened their pace, eager to distance themselves from Carvajal. Aragorn ploughed ahead determinedly, his legs burning. The mindless rhythm of walking freed his mind to think.
Once we get home, I won't travel any farther with Brom until I get some answers, he told himself firmly. I hope that he can tell me more about the riders and whom I'm fighting.
As the wreckage of the farm came into view, Brom's eyebrows beetled with anger. Aragorn was dismayed to see how swiftly nature was reclaiming the farm. Snow and dirt were already piled inside the house, concealing the violence of the stranger's attack. All that remained of the barn was a rapidly eroding rectangle of soot. Brom's head snapped up as the sound of Saphira's wings drifted over the trees. She dived past them from behind, almost brushing their heads. They staggered as a wall of air buffeted them. Saphira's scales glittered as she wheeled over the farm and landed gracefully. Brom stepped forward with an expression both solemn and joyous. His eyes were shining, and a tear shone on his cheek before it disappeared into his beard. He stood there for a long while, breathing heavily as he watched Saphira, and she him. Aragorn heard him muttering, and edged closer to listen.
So, it starts again. But how and where will it end? My sight is veiled. I cannot tell if this be tragedy or farce, for the elements of both are here. However it may be, my station is unchanged, and I...
Whatever else he might have said faded away as Saphira proudly approached them. Aragorn passed Brom, pretended he had heard nothing, and greeted her. There was something different between them now, as if they knew each other even more intimately, yet were still strangers. He rubbed her neck, and his palm tingled as their minds touched. A strong curiosity came from her.
I've seen no humans except you and Garrow, and he was badly injured, she said.
You viewed people through my eyes?
It's not the same.
She came closer and turned her long head so that she could inspect Brom with one large blue eye.
You really are queer creatures,
she said critically, and continued to stare at him. Brom held still as she sniffed the air, and then he extended a hand to her. Saphira slowly bowed her head and allowed him to touch her on the brow. With a snort, she jerked back and retreated behind Aragorn. Her tail flicked over the ground.
What is it? He asked.
She did not answer. Brom turned to him and asked in an undertone, What's her name?
Saphira.
A peculiar expression crossed Brom's face. He ground the butt of his staff into the earth with such force his knuckles turned white.
Of all the names you gave me, it was the only one she liked. I think it fits,
Aragorn added quickly.
Fit it does, said Brom.
There was something in his voice Aragorn could not identify. Was it loss, wonder, fear, envy? He was not sure. It could have been none of them or all. Brom raised his voice and said,
Greetings, Saphira. I am honored to meet you.
He twisted his hand in a strange gesture and bowed.
I like him, said Saphira quietly.
Of course you do. Everyone enjoys flattery.
Aragorn touched her on the shoulder and went to the ruined house. Saphira trailed behind with Brom. The old man looked vibrant and alive. Aragorn climbed into the house and crawled under a door into what was left of his room. He barely recognized it under the piles of shattered wood. Guided by memory, He searched where the inside wall had been and found his empty pack. Part of the frame was broken, but the damage could be easily repaired. He kept rummaging, and eventually uncovered the end of his bow, which was still in its buckskin tube. Though the leather was scratched and scuffed, he was pleased to see that the oiled wood was unharmed. Finally, some luck. He strung the bow and pulled on the sinew experimentally. It bent smoothly, without any snaps or creaks. Satisfied, he hunted for his quiver, which he found buried nearby. Many of the arrows were broken. He unstrung the bow and handed it and the quiver to Brom, who said,
"It takes a strong arm to pull that."
Aragorn took the compliment silently. He picked through the rest of the house for other useful items and dumped the collection next to Brom. It was a meager pile.
"What now?" asked Brom. His eyes were sharp and inquisitive.
Aragorn looked away. "We find a place to hide."
"Do you have somewhere in mind?"
"Yes." He wrapped all the supplies except for his bow into a tight bundle and tied it shut. Hefting it onto his back, he said, "This way," and headed into the forest.
"Saphira, follow us in the air. Your footprints are too easily found and tracked."
"Very well."
She took off behind them.
Their destination was nearby, but Aragorn took a circuitous route in an effort to baffle any pursuers. It was well over an hour before he finally stopped in a well-concealed bramble. The irregular clearing in the center was just large enough for a fire, two people, and a dragon. Red squirrels scampered into the trees, chattering in protest at their intrusion. Brom extricated himself from a vine and looked around with interest.
"Does anyone else know of this?" he asked.
"No. I found it when we first moved here. It took me a week to dig into the center, and another week to clear out all the dead wood."
Saphira landed beside them and folded her wings, careful to avoid the thorns. She curled up, snapping twigs with her hard scales, and rested her head on the ground. Her unreadable eyes followed them closely. Brom leaned against his staff and fixed his gaze on her. His scrutiny made Aragorn nervous. Aragorn watched them until hunger forced him to action. He built a fire, filled a pot with snow, and then set it over the flames to melt. When the water was hot, he tore off chunks of meat and dropped them into the pot with a lump of salt.
"Not much of a meal," he thought grimly, "but it'll do. I'll probably be eating this for some time to come, so I might as well get used to it."
The stew simmered quietly, spreading a rich aroma through the clearing. The tip of Saphira's tongue snaked out and tasted the air. When the meat was tender, Brom came over, and Aragorn served the food. They ate silently, avoiding each other's eyes. Afterward, Brom pulled out his pipe and lit it leisurely.
"Why do you want to travel with me?" asked Aragorn.
A cloud of smoke left Brom's lips and spiraled up through the trees until it disappeared.
"I have a vested interest in keeping you alive," he said.
"What do you mean?" demanded Aragorn.
"To put it bluntly, I'm a storyteller, and I happen to think that you will make a fine story. You're the first rider to exist outside of the king's control for over 100 years. What will happen? Will you perish as a martyr? Will you join the Varden, or will you kill King Galbatorix? All fascinating questions, and I will be there to see every bit of it, no matter what I have to do."
A knot formed in Aragorn's stomach. He could not see himself doing any of those things, least of all becoming a martyr.
"I want my vengeance, but for the rest, I have no ambition."
"That may be, but tell me, how can you talk with Saphira?"
Brom took his time putting more tobacco in his pipe. Once it was relit and firmly in his mouth, he said,
"Very well, if it's answers you want, it's answers you'll get. But they may not be to your liking."
He got up, brought his pack over to the fire and pulled out a long object wrapped in cloth. It was about 5 feet long and, from the way he handled it, rather heavy.
He peeled away the cloth, strip by strip, like a mummy being unswathed. Aragorn gazed, transfixed, as a sword was revealed. The gold pommel was teardrop-shaped, with the sides cut away to reveal a ruby the size of a small egg. The hilt was wrapped in silver wire, burnished until it gleamed like starlight. The sheath was wine-red and smooth as glass, adorned solely by a strange black symbol etched into it. Next to the sword was a leather belt with a heavy buckle. The last strip fell away, and Brom passed the weapon to Aragorn. The handle fit Aragorn's hand as if it had been made for him. He slowly drew the sword. It slid soundlessly from the sheath. The flat blade was iridescent red and shimmered in the firelight. The keen edges curved gracefully to a sharp point. A duplicate of the black symbol was inscribed on the metal. The balance of the sword was perfect. It felt like an extension of his arm, unlike the rude farm tools he was used to. An air of power lay over it, as if an unstoppable force resided in its core. It had been created for the violent convolutions of battle, to end men's lives. Yet it held a terrible beauty.
"This was once a rider's blade," said Brom gravely. "When a rider finished his training, the elves would present him with a sword. Their methods of forging have always remained secret. However, their swords are eternally sharp and will never stain. The custom was to have the blade's color match that of the rider's dragon, but I think we can make an exception in this case. This sword is named Zarak. I don't know what it means, probably something personal to the rider who owned it." He watched Aragorn swing the sword.
"Where did you get it?" asked Aragorn.
He reluctantly slipped the blade back into the sheath and attempted to hand the sword back, but Brom made no move to take it. "It doesn't matter," said Brom. "I will only say that it took me a series of nasty and dangerous adventures to attain it. Consider it yours. You have more of a claim to it than I do, and before all is done, I think you will need it." The offer caught Aragorn off guard.
"It is a princely gift. Thank you."
Unsure of what else to say, he slid his hand down the sheath.
"What is this symbol?" he asked.
"That was the rider's personal crest." Aragorn tried to interrupt, but Brom glared at him until he was quiet. "Now, if you must know, anyone can learn how to speak to a dragon if they have the proper training. And," he raised a finger for emphasis, "it doesn't mean anything if they can. I know more about the dragons and their abilities than almost anyone else alive. On your own, it might take years to learn what I can teach you. I'm offering my knowledge as a shortcut. As for how I know so much, I will keep that to myself."
Saphira pulled herself up as he finished speaking and prowled over to Aragorn. He pulled out the blade and showed her the sword.
"It has power," she said, touching the point with her nose.
The metal's iridescent color rippled like water as it met her scales. She lifted her head with a satisfied snort, and the sword resumed its normal appearance. Aragorn sheathed it, troubled. Brom raised an eyebrow.
"That's the sort of thing I'm talking about. Dragons will constantly amaze you. Things happen around them. Mysterious things that are impossible anywhere else. Even though the riders worked with dragons for centuries, they never completely understood their abilities. Some say that even the dragons don't know the full extent of their own powers. They are linked with this land in a way that lets them overcome great obstacles. What Saphira just did illustrates my earlier point. There is much you don't know." There was a long pause.
"That may be," said Aragorn, "but I can learn. And the strangers are the most important thing I need to know about right now. Do you have any idea who they are?"
Brom took a deep breath. "They are called the Razak. No one knows if that's the name of their race or what they have chosen to call themselves. Either way, if they have individual names, they keep them hidden. The Razak were never seen before Galbatorix came to power. He must have found them during his travels and enlisted them in his service. Little or nothing is known about them. However, I can tell you this. They aren't human. When I glimpsed one's head, it appeared to have something resembling a beak and black eyes as large as my fist, though how they manage our speech is a mystery to me. Doubtless the rest of their bodies are just as twisted. That is why they cover themselves with cloaks at all times, regardless of the weather. As for their powers, they are stronger than any man and can jump incredible heights, but they cannot use magic. Be thankful for that, because if they could, you would already be in their grasp. I also know that they have a strong aversion to sunlight, though it won't stop them if they're determined. Don't make the mistake of underestimating a Razak, for they are cunning and full of guile."
"How many of them are there?" asked Aragorn, wondering how Brom could possibly know so much.
"As far as I know, only the two you saw. There might be more, but I've never heard of them. Perhaps they're the last of a dying race. You see, they are the king's personal dragon hunters. Whenever rumors reach Galbatorix of a dragon in the land, he sends the Razak to investigate. A trail of death often follows them. Brom blew a series of smoke rings and watched them float up between the brambles. Aragorn ignored the rings until he noticed that they were changing color and darting around. Brom winked slyly. Aragorn was sure that no one had seen Saphira, so how could Galbatorix have heard about her? When he voiced his objections, Brom said, "You're right. It seems unlikely that anyone from Carver Hall could have informed the king. Why don't you tell me where you got the egg and how you raised Saphira? That might clarify the issue." Aragorn hesitated, then recounted all the events since he had found the egg in the spine. It felt wonderful to finally confide in someone. Brom asked a few questions, but most of the time he listened intently. The sun was about to set when Aragorn finished his tale. Both of them were quiet as the clouds turned a soft pink. Aragorn eventually broke the silence.
"I just wish I knew where she came from. And Saphira doesn't remember."
Brom cocked his head. "I don't know. You've made many things clear to me. I am sure that no one besides us has seen Saphira. The Razak must have had a source of information outside of this valley, one who is probably dead by now. You have had a hard time and done much. I'm impressed." Aragorn stared blankly into the distance, then asked,
"What happened to your head? It looks like you were hit with a rock."
"No, but that's a good guess." He took a deep pull on the pipe. "I was sneaking around the Razak's camp after dark, trying to learn what I could when they surprised me in the shadows. It was a good trap, but they underestimated me, and I managed to drive them away. Not, however," he said wryly, "without this token of my stupidity. Stunned, I fell to the ground and didn't regain consciousness until the next day. By then they had already arrived at your farm. It was too late to stop them, but I set out after them anyway. That's when we met on the road."
"Who is he to think that he could take on the Razak alone? They ambushed him in the dark, and he was only stunned?"
Unsettled, Aragorn asked hotly, "When you saw the mark, the Gedwe Ignazia, on my palm, why didn't you tell me who the Razak were? I would have warned Garrow instead of going to Saphira first, and the three of us could have fled."
Brom sighed. "I was unsure of what to do at the time. I thought I could keep the Razak away from you, and once they had left, confront you about Saphira. But they outsmarted me. It's a mistake that I deeply regret, and one that has cost you dearly."
"Who are you?" demanded Aragorn, suddenly bitter. "How come a mere village storyteller happens to have a rider's sword? How do you know about the Razak?"
Brom tapped his pipe.
"I thought I made it clear I wasn't going to talk about that."
"My uncle is dead because of this, dead!" exclaimed Aragorn, slashing a hand through the air. "I've trusted you this far because Saphira respects you, but no more! You're not the person I've known in Carver Hall for all of these years. Explain yourself!"
For a long time, Brom stared at the smoke swirling between them, deep lines creasing his forehead. When he stirred, it was only to take another puff. Finally, he said,
"You've probably never thought about it, but most of my life has been spent outside of Palancar Valley. It was only in Carver Hall that I took up the mantle of storyteller. I have played many roles to different people. I've a complicated past. It was partly through a desire to escape it that I came here. So no, I'm not the man you think I am."
"Ha!" snorted Aragorn. "Then who are you?"
Brom smiled gently. "I am one who is here to help you. Do not scorn those words. They are the truest I've ever spoken. But I'm not going to answer your questions. At this point, you don't need to hear my history, nor have you yet earned that right. Yes, I have knowledge Brom the storyteller wouldn't, but I'm more than he. You'll have to learn to live with that fact, and the fact that I don't hand out descriptions of my life to anyone who asks."
Aragorn glared at him sullenly. "I'm going to sleep," he said, leaving the fire. Brom did not seem surprised, but there was sorrow in his eyes. He spread his bedroll next to the fire as Aragorn lay beside Saphira. An icy silence fell over the camp.
Saddle-making.
When Aragorn's eyes opened,
The memory of Garrow's death crashed down on him. He pulled the blankets over his head and cried quietly under their warm darkness. It felt good just to lie there, to hide from the world outside. Eventually the tears stopped. He cursed Brom, then he reluctantly wiped his cheeks and got up. Brom was making breakfast.
"Good morning," he said.
Aragorn grunted in reply. He jammed his cold fingers in his armpits and crouched by the fire until the food was ready. They ate quickly, trying to consume the food before it lost its warmth. When he finished, Aragorn washed his bowl with snow, then spread the stolen leather on the ground.
"What are you going to do with that?" asked Brom. "We can't carry it with us."
"I'm going to make a saddle for Saphira."
"Hmm," said Brom, moving forward.
"Well, dragons used to have two kinds of saddles. The first was hard and molded like a horse's saddle, but those take time and tools to make, neither of which we have. The other was thin and lightly padded, nothing more than an extra layer between the rider and the dragon. Those saddles were used whenever speed and flexibility were important, though they weren't nearly as comfortable as the molded ones."
"Do you know what they looked like?" asked Aragorn.
"Better. I can make one."
"Then please do," said Aragorn, standing aside.
"Very well, but pay attention. Some day you may have to do this for yourself."
With Saphira's permission, Brom measured her neck and chest. Then he cut 5 bands out of the leather and outlined a dozen or so shapes on the hides. Once the pieces had been sliced out, he cut what remained of the hides into long cords. Brom used the cords to sew everything together, but for each stitch, 2 holes had to be bored through the leather. Aragorn helped with that. Intricate knots were rigged in place of buckles, and every strap was made extra long so the saddle would still fit Saphira in the coming months. The main part of the saddle was assembled from 3 identical sections sewn together with padding between them. Attached to the front was a thick loop that would fit snugly around one of Saphira's neck spikes, while wide bands sewn on either side would wrap around her belly and tie underneath. Taking the place of stirrups were a series of loops running down both bands. Tightened, they would hold Aragorn's legs in place. A long strap was constructed to pass between Saphira's front legs, split in 2, and then come up behind her front legs to rejoin with the saddle. While Brom worked, Aragorn repaired his pack and organized their supplies. The day was spent by the time their tasks were completed. Weary from his labor, Brom put the saddle on Saphira and checked to see that the straps fit. He made a few small adjustments, then took it off, satisfied.
"You did a good job," Aragorn acknowledged grudgingly.
Brom inclined his head.
"One tries his best. It should serve you well. The leather's sturdy enough."
"Aren't you going to try it out?" asked Saphira.
"Maybe tomorrow," said Aragorn, storing the saddle with his blankets. "It's too late now."
In truth, he was not eager to fly again, not after the disastrous outcome of his last attempt. Dinner was made quickly. It tasted good, even though it was simple. While they ate, Brom looked over the fire at Aragorn and asked,
"Will we leave tomorrow?"
"There isn't any reason to stay."
"I suppose not."
He shifted.
"Aragorn, I must apologize about how events have turned out. I never wished for this to happen. Your family did not deserve such a tragedy. If there were anything I could do to reverse it, I would. This is a terrible situation for all of us."
Aragorn sat in silence, avoiding Brom's gaze.
Then Brom said, "We're going to need horses."
"Maybe you do, but I have Saphira."
Brom shook his head.
"There isn't a horse alive that can outrun a flying dragon, and Saphira is too young to carry us both. Besides, it'll be safer if we stay together, and riding is faster than walking."
"But that'll make it harder to catch the Razak," protested Aragorn. "On Saphira, I could probably find them within a day or two. On horses, it'll take much longer, if it's even possible to overtake their lead on the ground."
Brom said slowly, "That's a chance you'll have to take if I'm to accompany you."
Aragorn thought it over.
"All right," he grumbled. "We'll get horses, but you have to buy them. I don't have any money and I don't want to steal again. It's wrong."
"That depends on your point of view," corrected Brom with a slight smile. "Before you set out on this venture, remember that your enemies, the Razak, are the king's servants. They will be protected wherever they go. Laws do not stop them.
In cities they'll have access to abundant resources and willing servants. Also, keep in mind that nothing is more important to Galbatorix than recruiting or killing you. Though word of your existence probably hasn't reached him yet. The longer you evade the Razak, the more desperate he'll become. He'll know that every day you'll be growing stronger and that each passing moment will give you another chance to join his enemies. You must be very careful, as you may easily turn from the hunter into the hunted. Aragorn was subdued by the strong words. Pensive, he rolled a twig between his fingers.
"Enough talk," said Brom. "It's late, and my bones ache. We can say more tomorrow."
Aragorn nodded and banked the fire. Therensford. Dawn was grey and overcast, with a cutting wind. The forest was quiet. After a light breakfast, Brom and Aragorn doused the fire and shouldered their packs, preparing to leave. Aragorn hung his bow and quiver on the side of his pack where he could easily reach them. Saphira wore the saddle. She would have to carry it until they got horses. Aragorn carefully tied Zarok onto her back, too, as he did not want the extra weight. Besides, in his hands, the sword would be no better than a club. Aragorn had felt safe inside the bramble, but outside, wariness crept into his movements. Saphira took off and circled overhead. The trees thinned as they returned to the farm.
"I will see this place again," Aragorn insisted to himself, looking at the ruined buildings. "This cannot, will not, be a permanent exile. Some day, when it's safe, I'll return."
Throwing back his shoulders, he faced south and the strange, barbaric lands that lay there. As they walked, Saphira veered west toward the mountains and out of sight. Aragorn felt uncomfortable as he watched her go. Even now, with no one around, they could not spend their days together. She had to stay hidden in case they met a fellow traveler. The Razak's footprints were faint on the eroding snow, but Aragorn was unconcerned. It was unlikely that they had forsaken the road, which was the easiest way out of the valley, for the wilderness. Outside the valley, however, the road divided in several places. It would be difficult to ascertain which branch the Razak had taken. They travelled in silence, concentrating on speed. Aragorn's legs continued to bleed where the scabs had cracked. To take his mind off the discomfort, he asked,
"So what exactly can dragons do? You said that you knew something of their abilities."
Brom laughed, his sapphire ring flashing in the air as he gestured,
"Unfortunately, it's a pitiful amount compared to what I would like to know. Your question is one people have been trying to answer for centuries, so understand that what I tell you is, by its very nature, incomplete. Dragons have always been mysterious, though maybe not on purpose. Before I can truly answer your question, you need a basic education on the subject of dragons. It's hopelessly confusing to start in the middle of such a complex topic without understanding the foundation on which it stands. I'll begin with the life cycle of dragons, and if that doesn't wear you out, we can continue to another topic."
Brom explained how dragons mate and what it took for their eggs to hatch.
"You see," he said, "when a dragon lays an egg, the infant inside is ready to hatch. But it waits, sometimes for years, for the right circumstances. When dragons lived in the wild, those circumstances were usually dictated by the availability of food. However, once they formed an alliance with the elves, a certain number of their eggs, usually no more than one or two, were given to the riders each year. These eggs, or rather the infants inside, wouldn't hatch until the person destined to be its rider came into their presence, though how they sensed that isn't known. People used to line up to touch the eggs, hoping that one of them might be picked."
"Do you mean that Saphira might not have hatched for me?" asked Aragorn.
"Quite possibly, if she hadn't liked you."
He felt honored that of all the people in Alagaesia she had chosen him. He wondered how long she had been waiting, then shuddered at the thought of being cramped inside an egg, surrounded by darkness. Brom continued his lecture. He explained what and when dragons ate. A fully grown sedentary dragon could go for months without food, but in mating season they had to eat every week. Some plants could heal their sicknesses, while others would make them ill. There were various ways to care for their claws and clean their scales. He explained the techniques to use when attacking from a dragon, and what to do if you were fighting one, whether on foot, horseback, or with another dragon. Their bellies were armored, their armpits were not. Aragorn constantly interrupted to ask questions, and Brom seemed pleased by the inquiries. Hours passed unheeded as they talked. When evening came, they were near Therensford. As the sky darkened and they searched for a place to camp, Aragorn asked, "Who was the rider that owned Zarok?"
"A mighty warrior," said Brom, "who was much feared in his time and held great power."
"What was his name?"
"I'll not say."
Aragorn protested, but Brom was firm.
"I don't want to keep you ignorant, far from it, but certain knowledge would only prove dangerous and distracting for you right now. There isn't any reason for me to trouble you with such things until you have the time and the power to deal with them. I only wish to protect you from those who would use you for evil."
Aragorn glared at him. "You know what? I think you just enjoy speaking in riddles. I've half a mind to leave you so I don't have to be bothered with them. If you're going to say something, then say it instead of dancing around with vague phrases."
"Peace. All will be told in time," Brom said gently.
Aragorn grunted, unconvinced. They found a comfortable place to spend the night and set up camp. Saphira joined them as dinner was being set on the fire. "Did you have time to hunt for food?" asked Aragorn. She snorted with amusement.
"If the two of you were any slower, I would have time to fly across the sea and back without falling behind."
"You don't have to be insulting. Besides, we'll go faster once we have horses." She let out a puff of smoke.
"Maybe, but will it be enough to catch the Razak? They have a lead of several days and many leagues, and I'm afraid they may suspect we're following them. Why else would they have destroyed the farm in such a spectacular manner, unless they wish to provoke you into chasing them?"
"I don't know," said Aragorn, disturbed. Saphira curled up beside him, and he leaned against her belly, welcoming the warmth. Brom sat on the other side of the fire, whittling two long sticks. He suddenly threw one at Aragorn, who grabbed it out of reflex as it whirled over the crackling flames.
"Defend yourself," barked Brom, standing.
Aragorn looked at the stick in his hand and saw that it was shaped in the crude likeness of a sword. Brom wanted to fight him?
What chance did the old man stand?
"If he wants to play this game, so be it. But if he thinks to beat me, he's in for a surprise." He rose as Brom circled the fire. They faced each other for a moment, then Brom charged, swinging his stick. Aragorn tried to block the attack, but was too slow. He yelped as Brom struck him on the ribs and stumbled backward. Without thinking, he lunged forward, but Brom easily parried the blow. Aragorn whipped the stick toward Brom's head, twisted it at the last moment, and then tried to hit his side. The solid smack of wood striking wood resounded through the camp.
"Improvisation, good!" exclaimed Brom, eyes gleaming.
His arm moved in a blur, and there was an explosion of pain on the side of Aragorn's head. He collapsed like an empty sack, dazed. A splash of cold water roused him to alertness, and he sat up, sputtering. His head was ringing, and there was dried blood on his face. Brom stood over him with a pan of melted snow water. "You didn't have to do that," said Aragorn angrily, pushing himself up. He felt dizzy and unsteady.
Brom arched an eyebrow. "Oh, a real enemy wouldn't soften his blows, and neither will I. Should I pander to your incompetence so you'll feel better?" "I don't think so."
He picked up the stick that Aragorn had dropped and held it out.
"Now defend yourself."
Aragorn stared blankly at the piece of wood, then shook his head. "Forget it. I've had enough." He turned away and stumbled as he was whacked loudly across the back. He spun around, growling.
"Never turn your back to the enemy," snapped Brom, then tossed the stick at him and attacked.
Aragorn retreated around the fire beneath the onslaught.
"Pull your arms in. Keep your knees bent," shouted Brom.
He continued to give instructions, then paused to show Aragorn exactly how to execute a certain move.
"Do it again, but this time slowly."
They slid through the forms with exaggerated motions before returning to their furious battle. Aragorn learned quickly, but no matter what he tried, he could not hold Brom off for more than a few blows. When they finished, Aragorn flopped on his blankets and groaned. He hurt everywhere. Brom had not been gentle with his stick. Saphira let out a long, coughing growl and curled her lip until a formidable row of teeth showed.
"What's wrong with you?"
he demanded irritably.
"Nothing," she replied. It's funny to see a hatchling like you beaten by the old one.
She made the sound again, and Aragorn turned red as he realized that she was laughing. Trying to preserve some dignity, he rolled onto his side and fell asleep. He felt even worse the next day. Bruises covered his arms, and he was almost too sore to move. Brom looked up from the mush he was serving and grinned. "How do you feel?" Aragorn grunted and bolted down the breakfast. Once on the road, they travelled swiftly so as to reach Therensford before noon. After a league, the road widened and they saw smoke in the distance. "You'd better tell Saphira to fly ahead and wait for us on the other side of Therensford," said Brom. "She has to be careful here, otherwise people are bound to notice her."
"Why don't you tell her yourself?" challenged Aragorn.
"It's considered bad manners to interfere with another's dragon."
"You didn't have a problem with it in Carvajal."
Brom's lips twitched with a smile.
"I did what I had to."
Aragorn eyed him darkly, then relayed the instructions. Saphira warned,
"Be careful. The Empire's servants could be hiding anywhere."
As the ruts in the road deepened, Aragorn noticed more footprints. Farms signalled their approach to Therensford. The village was larger than Carvajal, but it had been constructed haphazardly, the houses aligned in no particular order.
"What a mess," said Aragorn.
He could not see Dempton's mill.
"Baldur and Ulbrich have surely fetched Roran by now."
Either way, Aragorn had no wish to face his cousin.
"It's ugly, if nothing else," agreed Brom.
The Enora River flowed between them and the town, spanned by a stout bridge. As they approached it, a greasy man stepped from behind a bush and barred their way. His shirt was too short, and his dirty stomach spilled over a rope belt. Behind his cracked lips, his teeth looked like crumbling tombstones.
"You can stop right there. This is my bridge. Got a pate get over."
"How much?" asked Brom in a resigned voice. He pulled out a pouch, and the bridgekeeper brightened.
5 crowns, he said, pulling his lips into a broad smile.
Aragorn's temper flared at the exorbitant price, and he started to complain hotly, but Brom silenced him with a quick look. The coins were wordlessly handed over. The man put them into a sack hanging from his belt.
"Thank ye much," he said, in a mocking tone, and stood out of the way.
As Brom stepped forward, he stumbled and caught the bridgekeeper's arm to support himself.
"Watch your step," snarled the grimy man, sidling away.
"Sorry," apologized Brom, and continued over the bridge with Aragorn.
"Why didn't you haggle? He skinned you alive,"
exclaimed Aragorn when they were out of earshot.
"He probably doesn't even own the bridge. We could have pushed right past him."
"Probably," agreed Brom.
"Then why pay him?"
"Because you can't argue with all of the fools in the world. It's easier to let them have their way than trick them when they're not paying attention."
Brom opened his hand, and a pile of coins glinted in the light.
"You cut his purse," said Aragorn incredulously.
Brom pocketed the money with a wink.
"And it held a surprising amount. He should know better than to keep all these coins in one place."
There was a sudden howl of anguish from the other side of the river.
"I'd say our friend has just discovered his loss. If you see any watchmen, tell me."
He grabbed the shoulder of a young boy running between the houses and asked, "Do you know where we can buy horses?" The child stared at them with solemn eyes, then pointed to a large barn near the edge of Therensford.
"Thank you," said Brom,
tossing him a small coin. The barn's large double doors were open, revealing 2 long rows of stalls. The far wall was covered with saddles, harnesses, and other paraphernalia. A man with muscular arms stood at the end, brushing a white stallion. He raised a hand and beckoned for them to come over. As they approached, Brom said,
"That's a beautiful animal."
"Yes, indeed. His name's Snowfire. Mine's Haberth."
Haberth offered a rough palm and shook hands vigorously with Aragorn and Brom. There was a polite pause as he waited for their names in return. When they were not forthcoming, he asked,
"Can I help you?"
Brom nodded.
"We need 2 horses and a full set of tack for both. The horses have to be fast and tough. We'll be doing a lot of travelling."
Haberth was thoughtful for a moment.
"I don't have many animals like that, and the ones I do aren't cheap."
The stallion moved restlessly. He calmed it with a few strokes of his fingers.
"Price is no object. I'll take the best you have," said Brom.
Haberth nodded and silently tied the stallion to a stall. He went to the wall and started pulling down saddles and other items. Soon he had two identical piles. Next he walked up the line of stalls and brought out two horses. One was a light bay, the other a roan. The bay tugged against his rope.
"He's a little spirited, but with a firm hand you won't have any problems," said Haberth, handing the bay's rope to Brom.
Brom let the horse smell his hand. It allowed him to rub its neck.
"We'll take him," he said, then eyed the roan. "The other one, however, I'm not so sure of. There are some good legs on him." What will you take for Snowfire?"
Haberth looked fondly at the stallion.
"I'd rather not sell him. He's the finest I've ever bred. I'm hoping to sire a whole line from him."
"If you were willing to part with him, how much would all of this cost me?" asked Brom. Aragorn tried to put his hand on the bay like Brom had, but it shied away. He automatically reached out with his mind to reassure the horse, stiffening with surprise as he touched the animal's consciousness. The contact was not clear or sharp like it was with Zephira, but he could communicate with the bay to a limited degree. Tentatively, he made it understand that he was a friend. The horse calmed and looked at him with liquid brown eyes. Haberth used his fingers to add up the price of the purchase.
200 crowns and no less," he said with a smile, clearly confident that no one would pay that much.
Brom silently opened his pouch and counted out the money.
"Will this do?" he asked.
There was a long silence as Haberth glanced between Snowfire and the coins. A sigh, then,
"He is yours, though I go against my heart. I will treat him as if he had been sired by Gildentor, the greatest steed of legend," said Brom.
"Your words gladden me," answered Haberth, bowing his head slightly. He helped them saddle the horses. When they were ready to leave, he said,
"Farewell, then. For the sake of Snowfire, I hope that misfortune does not befall you." "Do not fear. I will guard him well," promised Brom as they departed.
"Here," he said, handing Snowfire's reins to Aragorn.
"Go to the far side of Therensford and wait there."
"Why?" asked Aragorn, but Brom had already slipped away. Annoyed, he exited Therensford with the two horses and stationed himself beside the road. To the south he saw the hazy outline of Utgard, sitting like a giant monolith at the end of the valley. Its peak pierced the clouds and rose out of sight, towering over the lesser mountains that surrounded it. Its dark, ominous look made Aragorn's scalp tingle. Brom returned shortly and gestured for Aragorn to follow. They walked until Therensford was hidden by trees. Then Brom said,
"The Razak definitely passed this way. Apparently they stopped here to pick up horses as we did. I was able to find a man who saw them. He described them with many shudders and said that they galloped out of Therensford like demons fleeing a holy man."
"They left quite an impression."
"Quite."
Aragorn patted the horses. "When we were in the barn, I touched the bay's mind by accident. I didn't know it was possible to do that."
Brom frowned. "It's unusual for one as young as you to have the ability. Most riders had to train for years before they were strong enough to contact anything other than their dragon."
His face was very thoughtful as he inspected Snowfire. Then he said,
"Take everything from your pack, put it into the saddlebags and tie the pack on top."
Aragorn did so, while Brom mounted Snowfire. Aragorn gazed doubtfully at the bay. It was so much smaller than Zephira that for an absurd moment he wondered if it could bear his weight. With a sigh, he awkwardly got into the saddle. He had only ridden horses bareback and never for any distance.
"Is this going to do the same thing to my legs as riding Zephira?" he asked.
"How do they feel now?"
"Not too bad, but I think any hard riding will open them up again."
"We'll take it easy," promised Brom.
He gave Aragorn a few pointers, then they started off at a gentle pace. Before long, the countryside began to change, as cultivated fields yielded to wilder land. Brambles and tangled weeds lined the road, along with huge rose bushes that clung to their clothes. Tall rocks slanted out of the ground, grey witnesses to their presence. There was an unfriendly feel in the air, an animosity that resisted intruders. Above them, growing larger with every step, loomed Utgard, its craggy precipices deeply furrowed with snowy canyons. The black rock of the mountain absorbed light like a sponge and dimmed the surrounding area. Between Utgard and the line of mountains that formed the east side of Palankar Valley was a deep cleft. It was the only practical way out of the valley. The road led toward it. The horse's hooves clacked sharply over gravel, and the road dwindled to a skinny trail as it skirted the base of Utgard. Aragorn glanced up at the peak looming over them, and was startled to see a steepled tower perched upon it. The turret was crumbling and in disrepair, but it was still a stern sentinel over the valley. "What is that?" he asked, pointing. Brom did not look up, but said sadly and with bitterness,
"An outpost of the Riders, one that has lasted since their founding. That was where Vrail took refuge, and where, through treachery, he was found and defeated by Galbatorix. When Vrail fell, this area was tainted. Edoxil, unconquerable, was the name of this bastion, for the mountain is so steep none may reach the top unless they can fly. After Vrail's death, the commoners called it Utgard, but it has another name, Ristvakbane, the Place of Sorrow. It was known as such to the last riders before they were killed by the king." Aragorn stared with awe. Here was a tangible remnant of the riders' glory, tarnished though it was by the relentless pull of time. It struck him then just how old the riders were. A legacy of tradition and heroism that stretched back to antiquity had fallen upon him. They travelled for long hours around Utgard. It formed a solid wall to their right as they entered the breach that divided the mountain range. Aragorn stood in his stirrups. He was impatient to see what lay outside of Palankar, but it was still too far away. For a while they were in a sloped pass, winding over hill and gully following the Anora River. Then, with the sun low behind their backs, they mounted a rise and saw over the trees. Aragorn gasped. On either side were mountains, but below them stretched a huge plain that extended to the distant horizon and fused into the sky. The plain was a uniform tan, like the colour of dead grass. Long, wispy clouds swept by overhead, shaped by fierce winds. He understood now why Brom had insisted on horses. It would have taken them weeks or months to cover that vast distance on foot. Far above, he saw Saphira circling high enough to be mistaken for a bird.
"We'll wait until tomorrow to make the descent," said Brom. "It's going to take most of the day, so we should camp now."
"How far across is the plain?" Aragorn asked, still amazed.
2 or 3 days to over a fortnight, depending on which direction we go. Aside from the nomad tribes that roam this section of the plains, it's almost as uninhabited as the Hadarak Desert to the east, so we aren't going to find many villages. However, to the south, the plains are less arid and more heavily populated.
They left the trail and dismounted by the Anora River. As they unsaddled the horses, Brom gestured at the bay.
"You should name him."
Aragorn considered it as he picketed the bay. "Well, I don't have anything as noble as Snowfire, but maybe this will do." He placed his hand on the bay and said, "I name you Cadoc. It was my grandfather's name, so bear it well." Brom nodded in approval, but Aragorn felt slightly foolish. When Saphira landed, he asked, "How do the plains look?"
"Dull. There's nothing but rabbits and scrub in every direction."
After dinner, Brom stood and barked, "Catch!" Aragorn barely had time to raise his arm and grab the piece of wood before it hit him on the head. He groaned as he saw another makeshift sword.
"Not again," he complained.
Brom just smiled and beckoned with one hand. Aragorn reluctantly got to his feet. They whirled around in a flurry of smacking wood and he backed away with a stinging arm. The training session was shorter than the first, but it was still long enough for Aragorn to amass a new collection of bruises. When they finished sparring, he threw down the stick in disgust and stalked away from the fire to nurse his injuries.
Thunder roar and lightning crackle. The next morning Aragorn avoided bringing to mind any of the recent events. They were too painful for him to consider. Instead, he focused his energies on figuring out how to find and kill the Razak.
"I'll do it with my bow," he decided,
imagining how the cloaked figures would look with arrows sticking out of them. He had difficulty even standing up. his muscles cramped with the slightest movement, and one of his fingers was hot and swollen. When they were ready to leave, he mounted Cadoc and said acidly, "If this keeps up, you're going to batter me to pieces."
"I wouldn't push you so hard if I didn't think you were strong enough."
"For once, I wouldn't mind being thought less of," muttered Aragorn. Cadoc pranced nervously as Saphira approached. Saphira eyed the horse with something close to disgust and said,
"There's nowhere to hide on the plains, so I'm not going to bother trying to stay out of sight. I'll just fly above."